You just listened to Power of Praise here on WEFT Champaign, 9.1 FM on the dial for a brand new day.
Dave Monk, your Prairie Monk, WAFT Champaign 90.1 on your FM dial.
And Dave on the board. This is July the 3rd, the day before Independence Day.
Yes. And we would like to have helpers on the Independence Day float. It's a little wet at the moment.
Yes, silly me. I could barely see any rain out there, so I hopped on my bike. Yay, it'll just be a little bit of a drip. Well, it's actually more of a drip. This might not be the best of mornings to go for a bike ride. Take my word for it.
Yes, it's slippery. You can slip on streetscapes that are oily and haven't had a lot of rain, perhaps. And you can also slip on railroad lines and things. So, having done it... Okay, a reminder that there's a celebration of life for Elizabeth Hanson at July 9 at the Clark Lindsay Village in Urbana, and it will be from 1 to 4. We've been using Elizabeth Hanson's landscape book and been very pleased to do so. I want to deal with Weaver Prairie. This week we had a fun ice cream party organized by Liz Kirby. She had noticed that the edge timbers have a lot of blackberries, mulberries, and raspberries, and she invited people to collect cupfuls of sorted fruit and add ice cream. And We all got together and talked, and that was kind of nice. So that's prompted me to say something about the Weaver Prairie, which is a reconstruction prairie. And we even had Paul Muth there picking blackberries. And you have to think something about where the blackberries belong. And so then you have to think about how you get rid of them and how that sometimes denied people who are used to picking on the prairie. So they don't really belong. They're invasives. But this is an urban park. It's on Main Street, just east of Urbana, just east of the Quaker Hall and of the county administration. And Bob Vaden lives just across the road and has had a lot to do with this prairie and its biodiversity. It's a reconstruction prairie, but very nicely, it has an old growth forest, part of a savanna, because the trees have lots of limbs that go out and like a cloud, which indicates that there were few trees and prairie was among them. There happens to be a little bit of a depression there, which has allowed this small forest with some rather large trees to survive. And thankfully to someone sometime who has managed to keep that intact for years, congratulations to them. And we don't know who, or probably the park district does not know who, but it's I'll guess it's probably 25-30 acres. And it has a detention pond in it, which takes drainage and is rather healthy in it. It gives a range of organisms. It's dedicated to Stanley Weaver. Stanley Weaver was a very prominent citizen. He was mayor of Urbana 3 times, a state representative 1 time, and a senator for 10 terms. And he would win with a landslide. He couldn't really oppose Stanley Weaver. And he had a lot to do with establishing Lincoln Square. He helped to get 130, which was routed through Urbana, rooted onto University Avenue, so it then went out 150 and went south by where Walmart is at the present time. He was a very strong supporter of the University of Illinois, including places like Beckman Center. He was an Army Air Force person. He lived very near. He lived on High Cross Road, which is an extension of 130, just north of, or it wasn't even north of, it was north of 150, but just south of 74. And I remember calling him once, Dick Bowash, the Bowash family had a large homestead on the corner of Curtis and 45, and I thought that it was the sort of building that often gets used as a funeral home, and Stanley was the owner of a funeral home and the director of it, and people were very glad that he was there for funerals because he sort of knew everyone. He told me that there was enough funeral homes, so he didn't want to think about taking over the Burwash cottage, but he was wearing nice about it, and I remember talking to him. He was also aware that we have prairie, and now there is a prairie dedicated to him. We won't have a lot of time to put in pictures, so we'll put in one or two pictures, but I did take video of that site, and We'll put up a link. We're in the formative stages of putting links together, and we're doing it in a fairly rough and tough manner. We're trying to script on the fly so that we can just drag a series of videotapes into Vegas, a computer program that converts this radio program into a video program, goes up on Habana Public Television on Tuesdays at 6 o'clock and Fridays at 1 o'clock. It's reverse. It goes first on 1 o'clock Friday and then on Tuesday at 6 o'clock. And our aim is to put the links in with the program that is discussed. Went to the rail trail, and I'm very concerned about that. I've been involved with it for years. Heartland Pathways took out the interim trail use agreement with the federal government that made this trail possible. It's not always recognized, but that's the way it is, and that's the way the documents are. The rail trail doesn't start at Dobson Drive, which is where the trail has a lot of trees adjacent to housing. It starts at Main Street. So if you go out Main Street from Urbana, past the Weaver Prairie, and around the corner to join 150, it starts right there and goes past Aldi's and a little settlement and on the way to St. Joe. It's being developed at the present time. A lot of progress has been made, and I was checking it out. I would like the little piece between Main Street and 130, which is probably about a half mile at most, perhaps a quarter of a mile, to be retained as a remnant prairie, which it was before there was a lot of roadside development there. I'm not anxious for that to be a forested area, but probably some trees will remain. And this Champaign County Design and Conservation Foundation did decide, in wisdom, to put in four ceremonial trees, which will deny the prairie some. But, you know, these things happen, and we do what we can, how we can, as best we can. The trail itself is being molded. It has limitations. First of all, it's a federal plan and has federal dictates of ASTO, which is the Association of American Association of State Highway Transportation Officials. And they have a sort of a one-size-fits-all trail guide. And since most of the 80% of the money for this trail is coming from the Rail Banking Act, then they have some say as to what the trail is like. Then ADA, the American Disabilities Act, gets into the system so that you have a 10-foot-wide trail with 2 feet of gravel on either side, and that's so that you can pass wheelchairs and the like, which makes it a highway adjacent to Highway 150, which is a little bit more than we wanted. And we also wanted to have the prairie creep up onto the trail, and it has done that over the years. Then EPA gets into the act because the creosote may have leached from the ties, you know, off a 100-year-old ties, into the bed. So the rather consolidated ballast, which rail trail people enjoy is being removed and replaced with 10 inches of chipped limestone. There's also a high hoe being going along the edges to scrape up the any possible creosote that has leached onto the edges of the ballast. The amount of equipment involved is serious. The trail is owned by the Forest Preserve District in Champaign County, and in Vermilion County, it's the Vermilion County Conservation District. And a contract has been let for the first 6 miles. The bids came in the vicinity of $3 million, which was about $400,000 beyond what was anticipated. So fundraising is in process for at least $180,000 at the moment. There have been some difficulties with drainage, and so that will probably require some more. It's a lot of money, but when you look at it, you see large equipment that could put its metallic arms around a tree and cut it off and then lie it sideways and stack it up, and then another organization and equipment comes and puts those piles of trees together and puts them through a chipper, which is can take up to an 8 or 10 inch tree. Then the chips are removed, and then the surface is modeled, and in some places I suspect that limestone has already been put down. At the places where there are road crossings, if there's a ridge involving the railroad bed and the road cuts through it, then there's a slope down, and those slopes will be asphalted and designed so that people can move with a bicycle across the road. Some roads have already been remodeled recently, because the process was that when Heartland Postways took it over, the rules of the game are that if you want to have a trail, you have to apply to the Department of Surface Transportation in Washington. You have to have agreement from the railroad, the Surface Transportation Board, and the acquiring local agency. The local agency has to buy the bed. Heartland Pathways had already bought 33 miles of railroad bed in the Monticello area and got it funded. We had the courage to say that we could buy the bed in an appropriate time set by a joint consultation between the railroad, the Surface Transportation Board, and the locals, being Heartland Pathways. Champaign County Design and Conservation Foundation decided after the fact they could have applied for the trail and to do the trail work with an interim trail use agreement at the outset, but didn't, but wanted to take this over because they were a trust. Banner Park District especially was interested, and they did take over in a rather aggressive manner, and so Heartland Pathways retreated for a number of years and was not included, because we had a different way of thinking about a trail authority. We wanted a 7-person board with a range of different people. CCDC wanted existing groups like the Forest Preserve and Conservation Districts to take over because they already existed. But they do have a more of a recreational orientation than Heartland Pathways has. Heartland Pathways being very interested in the small amounts of rather impure remnant prairies along the way. Some of them are surprisingly good, but we had hoped to buy this line with that view in character. So it's rails, trails, and greenways. The Rail Banking Act was instituted to allow bicycles to take over in an interim manner. They were noticing that the rails were being taken out, abandoned across the country to the point where they didn't have contiguity. So they also noticed that bicycle people were buying the railroad beds, had trouble with reversionary clauses where they'd come to a piece of land that reverted to an adjacent owner, and they would have to go around 7 miles to get to the other side. So the Rail Banking Act quieted reversionary titles, saved bridges which normally were mandated to be removed at the time of abandonment, and they gave considerable enhancement money. The locals still had to buy the railroad bed, but there was considerable enhancement money if the agency that was speaking to provide the to buy the line from Conrail met the dictates of time associated with the payment of the amount. Unfortunately, CCDC didn't get the money, so the line reverted to Conrail and CSX, a major railroad in the Danville area, bought the line to a banner, and subsequently sold 25 feet to the Department of Transportation and for a road widening. And that road widening has now been completed. The road just east of Route 130 has been raised by about 2 feet. The land there is very low, and when you had a 5-inch rain, you always had a birdbath there that cars could not get through, so that has been widened. The edges, unfortunately, have been installed with the Drummer and Flanagan soils that are some of our best prairie soils. So we lost some prairie there, but there was a lot of prairie that soils, perhaps 50 or 60 truckloads that went to the Forest Preserve that were not needed because of drainage deals. And the Forest Preserve has been allowed to do planting and restoration of the prairie on the area. The roadsides have been planted to roadside species, and they will be mown. We would like to have a no-mow policy, but frankly, that's probably not going to happen. So this is somewhat of a repetition, but it's not easy to understand all this, and we get quite a few questions about the corridor as it's developed. One of the major questions is, why are you taking out all those trees? Well, this corridor used to be maintained with an axe and a saws. And this area, especially just east of 130 along towards Mount Olive Cemetery at Mayview, was really good prairie. with hardly a tree on it. And so that has returned. So you'll be biking through or hiking through what is a restoration of remnant prairie that was native to this area. This is the botany, this is the ecology, this is the zoology of this particular corridor. It's not the world's greatest, folks, because we don't have anything left. And this is the one of the best of the left. The bid was won by Cross Construction Company, which is a local company, and it is into action. The process of engineering is being supervised by a Farnsworth group, is a group that is contracted to double-check the engineering that's being done. In some places, the state highway engineers will also be involved. So let me look at my notes here. So I said about EPA, and I said about ADA, and I said about ASTO. Those are three major agencies involved in planning. And I've noted that construction is being done by Cross Engineering, and they have equipment that we as locals could never put together. So this is a very friendly situation. I am very pleased with it, and I hope that some of you will be able to contribute to its high cost. Just something like a sheep's foot roller that compacts the surface after limestone has been put down is a very costly piece of equipment. A hi-hoe which digs on the side and brings up soil that EPA wants to get rid of is also costly. The piece of equipment that removes stumps is all of it is extensive. It's happening at once, so sometimes there's one type of equipment at one end and another type at the other. There has to be a bridge over the Salt Fork Creek at St. Joe. And there has to be a different sort of development, an urban development, right in St. Joe, where the line used to go by a major elevator there. So the line that's being worked on is about 7 miles long, and you can really see it at the moment. The trucks that have been running along it have consolidated the surface, and you're not supposed to be on the bed at the moment, but in future, that will make this a trail, a rather nice trail for hiking and biking, but also something that allows communities to get together with each other and also be on either side of the right-of-way. There is the potential for prairie. I was also watching carefully the old interurban bed, which is owned by Illinois Traction Company. I'm not quite sure who has bought that, but it's not an area that's used very much by farmers, but it sometimes is bought by farmers. And it is also in certain places, like between Fools and the Pioneer Grain, is just loaded with original prairie, and the soils are original. So I spent time yesterday afternoon walking that territory. I saw verbena, I saw the common prairie plants, stiff-leaf goldenrod, dark compass plant, gray-headed coneflower, you name it. It's there, and we're very lucky to have it. I was somewhat disappointed by the amount of mowing while I was there. The a township mower came by and mowing the side of the road. And I really think this is a very expensive luxury. It takes a lot of gas. It takes a toll on equipment, and it requires labor. And before the 4th of July, there's usually a move to mow. It gets mown again later. At this stage, you're supposed to mow down to the drain and not up to the other side, but often both the drain and up the other side are mown. 15-foot mowers are used, and 15-foot mowers are large. If they come to a phone booth or a sprint sign or something like that, they mow around, and they mow onto the right-of-way that is owned by somebody else. Now, this sort of mowing can be genuinely felt to be doing a neatness thing, and we understand that. But this is not necessary, especially when we're trying to preserve prairie. There's a little offshoot road from Pioneer Grain that goes across the Sangamon River, and there's very little traffic on that road. And that, too, has been mown. And in that case, there's no reason why the mowing should decease or desist, and they prairie them right up to the road. It's not a highway. It's a highway that's been retired and is a local road. I photograph these things because there's only one way to convince people that we don't need that mowing. We need mowing to make a statement. That's okay. But we also need to mow appropriately. And some of this mowing, or a lot of this mowing, is rather excessive. And that's my opinion, but it's also a lot of other people's opinion, too. We need the local prairie ecosystem to grow and express itself. It's no point in taking a mower in August and before the silphiums and other prairie plants have grown and mowing them down. They'll grow. They have things like silphium, for instance. A compass plant may have a taproot that's 10 feet deep and 10 inches across at the base of the flowering stems. And so it will come back. It has that energy. But why do it? So it's that we have a sociological addiction to neatness, rectilinear nature, and everything looks like a weed and it's not. So we are putting pictures into these programs because we need people to know what pea balm is, what grated cornflower is, what a lot of these creatures are that are our heritage. We're down to less than 1% of good remnant prairie that we've saved. There's a lot of little sites here and there. You can run along a road before the mowers come, and you can actually see big blue stem growing and a little clump of purple cornflowers or something like that. You know that's prairie soil, and you know that it is prairie plants, and you know that there's the zoology to it, too. There are the entomological insects, 2,000 different species. And you need a volume of prairie to make it work. So if your bumblebee is going to travel along the transportation corridor, then it needs to be able to go to clump to clump or have some continuity. And we beg the mowing part of the State Department of Transportation to be very careful about doing intensive mowing. And you have to know that for years and years. The areas on one side, a mile on one side of a little town and a mile on the other side. It's called mowing out the town. It's been going on for years, so it'll take another 200 years to change the culture. But we really do not need that amount of mowing. The plants grow 10 feet tall, yes, but they're not going to fall over on the road. They're not going to harbor. In some cases, they may harbor a rabbit or a deer, but they also have save an eastern Massasauga rattler or other creatures that are in there. We also have to figure out how to get access to these places. You're often on a highway where you dare not stop on the side of the road, but there are places that you could have a little cooperative action so that there would be a pad here. Just outside of 130, there's a huge electrical grid that goes across, so that area is heavily mown, and it always has trucks that need to stop there. So it would be nice to have a little pad that wouldn't interrupt the drainage, that would allow one or two cars to have access to the railbed. When you're talking about and politicking about rail trails, you really have to figure that sometimes you do not have time to put somebody on a bicycle, and they might not even ride a bicycle, to go on a trail. You have to take them out there in a van or a bus and stop at a certain place and discuss the value of that piece of ground or that piece of railroad road crossover. And it would be very nice to have intermittent spots where you could stop and tell that story in an efficient manner of time. We do have to get supporters to understand what is happening. There's this disappointment about taking out trees, but you have to explain that, and you have to take people to prairie situations that are valuable. So I would suggest one such pad where there's two major grid power lines going across, and they don't like trees growing underneath. The prairie doesn't have trees, so that's not a problem for us, but it's a place where you could have access to the corridor. We don't know what the bridge will be like across the Salt Fork, but it will probably be a pre-constructed bridge on top of a bridge, and that probably will come prefabricated and be dropped in. The underpinning bridge at St. Joe is a rather new railroad bridge. It's all steel. We have to be very careful about it, because if you take to doing something like heating your hot dogs on the bridge, if it's a steel bridge, then the steel will buckle if it catches on fire with wooden ties on top. If it's a wooden bridge, you can probably replace pieces. But with a steel bridge, you have to replace the whole lot. So the cost of running a trail is not just constructing the trail, it's also maintaining it and surveilling it. And that often comes to the responsibility of citizens who are on the are in the vicinity. There also needs to be a knowledge of what's to the north and south of this east-west railroad bed. There was a Lincoln Trail, and you should be able to take off on your bicycle, perhaps follow the old interurban from Ogden down to Homer, where Homer Lake, there used to be a picnic ground, and this was an interurban attraction. So you need to explain little things like that and give people something to enjoy on their way to Danville, where there's a Kickapoo State Park that has been mined and again is different but interesting. I just kept photographing. I went past Fool's Elevator. What do we do with Fool's Elevator? Do you have people to stop and gaze, or do you in season get to realize that this is a major elevator with recent upgrade? How does it work, and how can the public relate to this, or do we just fence off a corridor and keep the people going? Rail trails, after all, are not very interesting trails. When you have a train, you can't go down and up easily across a river. You can't go round bends easily. So you have a fairly straight, flat trail. And so it's nice to have little interesting things here and there, like a square elevator rumpler or an old interurban depot at Fithian, or a large bridge at as you go into Danville. They're all little things that we should think about now, because that allows the public to be interested and to be the self-control of the trail. It usually takes about 15 years for a trail to become self-perpetuating, so that the public realizes that they own it and that they should care for it. We're often faced with people who like to dump on a day when the landfill is not open, or people don't have the money to drop stuff at the landfill. They end up dumping it on the side of the road. So those things we have to watch. This involves or the need for a lot of volunteer thought and action. Just to collect the seeds from other railroad rights of way or urban sources of prairie, to collect the seed, to process the seed, and some seed is terribly hard to process. You need something like a hammer mill that will take the seed and just crush the seed pod enough to release the seed without crushing the seed. So you have to set the hammer so that you can do that. So somebody has to own a hammer mill, and somebody has to collect the seed that goes into it, and somebody has to have the money to buy seed from places like Prairie Moon, where they do this sort of work. You have to decide what sort of mixes you want. Where you have a wetland like the Weaver Prairie, you need wetland species. If you have a little hill, you need dry area species. So there's a spectrum here. If you're in a drain, you might have cordgrass. Then you have to think about the balance between people who want water off and people who want water to sink into the aquifer. Water doesn't sink into the aquifer quickly, and so we wouldn't have farmland in East Central Illinois if we didn't have that sort of drain that takes water off. But when you take water off and you drain phosphates and nitrates into the water and it goes down the Mississippi, it ends up with a hypoxia zone or a dead zone in the Gulf of Mexico. So some of the responsibility starts right here at home. How do you talk to people who are in the little urban situations? How do you organize a bicycle shop or a restaurant or a hot dog stand that can be used by bicycle people? What sort of bicycle do you want? Can you use a very narrow-tired bicycle on a trail like this? Probably not. You have, so bicycle people have several different bicycles, and the one that you would use on this sort of area would be an all-terrain vehicle. So that means you have to know something about an all-terrain vehicle. Let me look at time. We've got 46, okay. So I've got some other things to talk about. I think that's probably enough about the K-Trail. I'm interested that at one place where farmers took out two segments of rail bed for drainage purposes without permission, and they are being repaired, so you don't have what is called a Missouri crossing. That's where your bicycle goes down into the swampland and up the other side. And the difficulty there is that the growth on the wetland part makes the trail impossible. So those two sites where that has happened are being repaired. Okay, now, Pocket Prairie. Pocket Prairie has got into problems again. There are new bars, and there's a lot of summer traffic, and people have been using the little prairie at night. Dr. Youngerman has hired a policeman to watch these areas, and there's been disenchantment with little Pocket Prairie being used by too many people, and sometimes a party. Sometimes people just need to urinate there, and that's also a problem. So the dictate at the moment is that the prairie be closed between 6 and 6. So overnight, no access. So I've had to put a rope across it, and we hope the rope won't be violated. And we hope that there won't be arrests there, but that's the intent, is to allow the prairie to be open to the general public during the day. But at night, we need to quell the untoward behavior. It's not that untoward, folks. It's quite friendly. And actually, I give flashlight field trips. I gave one last night. But it's just too much to have too many people there, and sometimes doing things that aren't friendly to the owners of the place. And we're there as tenants, and we have a really, really nice prairie working very well at the moment. It's flowering. The rosin weed is out. The bled plant is out. The dock is up, and a compass plant, and trotter scandia, and yellow cornflower, and roses and culver's root, and they're all there expressing themselves, and it's wonderful. But please be respectful of the prairie when you go out there. If you want to go out and read a book, wonderful. It's a retreat. There's a little forest that goes with the prairie. It's a prairie forest ecosystem. And just we have to beg people to respect it. And that mostly happens. I talked to Carlos, the new owner of the Mike and Molly's last night, but it was 1 o'clock, and I was standing there just to make sure that the place was not abused. We did prepare a Pocket Prairie link. We were very pleased with ourselves. We voiced over it, and it will go up shortly so that you will understand the prairie a little bit more than you do just by a radio program. The visuals are needed there to let you know the nature of the prairie. It's like Lake Prairie. It's doing very well at the moment. Just the rainfall, the season has been just right for prairies. Not so good for purple coneflowers, but otherwise, a lot of these creatures have adapted to a certain niche, and sometimes it's like the cicadas are on a 17-year rhythm. Other plants and animals are on rhythms, and so they don't always appear at the same time with the same volume of expression. Remember that a prairie conference is from 17 July to 20th of July at Bloomington, very close, and it's an opportunity to commune with a group of people who are very concerned about prairie, whether it be in Canada or in Texas or Alabama or Ohio. This is a once every 2 year conference, a biennial conference that is very near to home at this time. If you haven't been to Cemetery Prairies, go to the Grand Prairie Friends field trip on prairies. If you haven't been to Neshoshone Parklands, that's a chance for you to go to Oregon, Illinois, where there's a nice volume of prairie. It's not just a skinny railroad of prairie. It's a volume enough to have buffalo. If you're thinking about the restoration of strip mines and the like, go to a Pete Schramm field trip to Galesburg. There are also half-day local prairies, but Tuesday of the conference is designed for field trips. And I will be going to Iroquois County, where there is a sand prairie that I'm very interested in having people come off 57 and do a prairie field trip down to Rantoul and to know something about the landscape that they're moving through. A lot of people are wondering, what is the ecology? Ask the question, can we take people to the ecology easily? No. So we need to do that. I've been communicating with the Prairie State Conservation Coalition and Open Lands, and the question is, why haven't we paid our dues for being a member of the of the coalition, and are we in need of support? Well, yes, we are in need of support. We don't have the money to pay $100 to be a member, and that's a challenge for us to raise the money and get grant money to work with a railroad bed that's 33 miles long, and it's in the area of Monticello to Clinton, and part of this corridor runs parallel to Allerton Park. We have crud trees, autumn olives, growing well on this mainly prairie ecosystem. We've had a lot of sympathy from farmers who are adjacent. Some few farmers have the temerity to dig up from the side and or sometimes dig up the railroad bed. But basically we have a lot of real estate. But once again, you need federal, state, and local major support. You can see what's happening in the area between Urbana and Kickapoo State Park. It's taking $12 million, and I suspect it'll take more than that, and it'll take more than that to maintain it. And for some people, that's taking money out of my taxpayers' pocket. But the result is often an extremely popular type of trail. There are now 30,000 miles of these sorts of trails. They're interim trails. A train can come back in, seldom does, because they're often small railroads, and the major emphasis on railroads has been the main lines. And putting back, in some cases, two rail lines so that freight can pass passenger trains without there being a blockage. So we always have a lot of argument about that between Chicago and Champaign and southern Illinois, and also between Chicago and Bloomington and St. Louis. So watch your railroads, work with them, but realize that many of the small lines are available for you to do restoration work if you can catch them at the right time. at Bonneville, between Bonneville and Seymour. We're still working with the Surface Transportation Board with the hope to retain 3 miles of active, it's not active, it's a bed that hasn't been used for 3 years, but it's got rail on it, it's got ties on it, it's got potential to be used to bring grain out by train, which is much less expensive than to take it out by road. And that's what's happening at the moment. So there's 3 miles between Bonneville and Seymour that is railed, and we as Heartland Pathways own 4 miles of railroad bed, and we've given an easement to a historic railroad company, which is called Champaign, Havana, and White Heath Railroad, and it would make it possible for 7 miles of the railroad museum to connect with 4 miles of Heartland Pathways if we rerail it, and we hope to rerail it, and then 3 miles to Bonneville, and then we don't quite know where we go when we get into town, but we would like to bring historic trains into Champaign. Not a lot, but occasionally. It's 25 miles, so you got to be careful that you have enough sites on the way, wooden elevators or prairies or other situations to make it interesting. And if we do that, you would have to go and come back. You can't make this a service line. You can't put someone on the train at Monticello and they get off at Champaign. They have to go to Champaign and go back to Monticello. A whole different ticketing if you're going to use a line for commercial lifting of people. So that is in action. We've just organized insurance on that piece. The historic railroad has an easement of 25 feet. That means they have the ballast. The ballast is there. They've acquired steel, stick rail, 33 feet long in each case, that can be put down. We're waiting for the hope that a top flight, the grain elevator concern, will hopefully take its grain out by Champaign rather than ship it by road to Monticello. That's a challenge because, as you most all know, the GMOs are yielding higher than the regular corn, so the elevator companies are having to put in increased elevator space, which costs money, and so we're facing the fact that we may not have the finance to buy that 3 miles. To assess it, you have to figure on what is the cost of the salvage cost of the or value of the rails, the ties, the plates, and so we're thinking about a lot of things, and we hope that you'll communicate with us from time to time. 351-1911. We'd like to have some helpers on the a small float, and so this has been Dave Monk, your Prairie Monk, WEFT Champaign 90.1 on the FM dial,
and Dave on the board. And as always, the views and opinions expressed are solely those of the speakers and nobody else. Dave has mentioned the floats tomorrow. Of course, we're due to have...
No, it's not tomorrow. It's...
Oh, yes, it is. It is tomorrow. This is the 3rd.
That's right.
It means tomorrow is the 4th. The bad news is, I was just checking the weather, and they're expecting us to have a... there's no hour in which we're not expected to have some chance of rain from now until tomorrow afternoon. So, unfortunately, maybe the parade will be rained out tomorrow.
There has been occasion when it has been so stormy that the parade...